The bug blindness essay from Dan Liu accumulated 275 points and 166 comments, which for a software engineering think piece is substantial. Liu's argument is about a specific cognitive phenomenon. Experienced engineers sometimes lose the ability to see certain categories of bugs because they've internalized the assumption that particular things just work. You become blind to failure modes you've never personally experienced. The essay is full of concrete examples where expert intuition pointed strongly in the wrong direction because the expert's mental model was calibrated on a world where certain classes of failures didn't happen.
The HN thread was unusually self-reflective for an engineering crowd. People were sharing specific examples from their own careers where their expertise had become a liability, where the pattern recognition that usually accelerates debugging actually caused them to dismiss the true root cause. One commenter made the point that this is why diverse teams debug faster. Someone who hasn't internalized the assumption that the database is reliable will actually check the database while the senior engineer is deep in application code.
The near memory compute story from Hotchips 2026 is where serious hardware people should pay attention. Xena and Samsung presented a CXL device. CXL stands for Compute Express Link, a high bandwidth interconnect standard that places compute units physically adjacent to memory. The premise is that the bottleneck in many AI and data processing workloads isn't raw compute or raw memory bandwidth taken separately, but the latency and energy cost of moving data between the CPU and memory. If you can do computation where the data lives, you eliminate most of those transfers.
CXL as a standard is gaining traction because it offers a way to disaggregate memory from compute in a data center context while maintaining cache coherence, meaning the CPU and the CXL device can share a unified memory view without software having to manage explicit data movement. The Samsung implementation described at Hotchips adds compute capability to that memory, turning a storage and memory tier into something that can actually run inference operations. For the AI infrastructure business, this could meaningfully change the cost structure of running models at scale.
The tiny ELF executables post from 1999 is making the rounds again. It's an essay by Brian Rader about constructing Linux ELF executables that are as small as physically possible, down to a few dozen bytes. It reads as a masterclass in actually understanding what a computer is doing at the binary level, stripping away every abstraction until you're manually constructing memory layouts and system call tables. The reason it keeps resurfacing on HN is that the core lesson, understanding your tools at the level below your usual abstraction, never expires.
It's the hardware equivalent of what that DN42 networking post is arguing. Build it from scratch at least once because the understanding you gain is qualitatively different from what you get from reading documentation.
The Einstein-Shillard refrigerator is exactly the kind of historical tangent that Hacker News does better than anywhere else. In the 1920s, Albert Einstein and Leo Szilard, before Szilard was involved in the Manhattan Project, co-invented a refrigerator design that had no moving parts. Their motivation was reading a newspaper account of a family that died when a refrigerant leak from a mechanical pump spread through their home. Einstein and Szilard wanted to build something that couldn't leak because it had no seals that could fail. The design uses thermodynamic principles to drive refrigerant movement through temperature differentials alone. It was patented, briefly commercialized, and then largely abandoned when more efficient mechanical designs took over. But it's found renewed interest in solar-powered cooling applications where silence and reliability matter more than efficiency.
The Benjamin Franklin alter ego piece from the Smithsonian runs parallel to the Einstein-Shillard story in a surprising way. Franklin, the Post argues, used pen names and constructed personas not just to protect himself from political consequences, but to genuinely think differently. Writing as Silence Dogood or Richard Saunders let him explore ideas that Franklin as statesman couldn't afford to hold publicly. The alter ego was a cognitive tool as much as a protective shield. The HN comments drew connections to how anonymous online communities sometimes enable more honest technical discourse for the same reason.
The Straight Line Paths paper from 2018, the one about the longest possible straight line routes across water or land, is pure geometric delight. The researchers found that you can sail in a straight line for approximately 32,089 kilometers from Pakistan to the Kamchatka Peninsula in Russia without touching land. On land, you can hike in a straight line from Liberia to China, again avoiding water, for about 11,241 kilometers. These paths require extraordinary precision to actually navigate because small errors compound over such distances, but they exist. The HN discussion was predictably wonderful. People arguing about geodesics, great circles, and what straight even means on a sphere.
And Glacier Mice, the HN community has excellent taste in Wikipedia rabbit holes. Glacier mice are spherical clumps of moss that form on glaciers and move around on their own, collectively. They don't blow in the wind, they don't follow melt patterns, they don't roll downhill, they move in coordinated groups, roughly 1 centimeter per day, in directions that seem to shift together. Nobody has a fully satisfying explanation for why they do this. The leading hypothesis involves subtle thermal gradients within the moss ball creating differential melting on different sides, but the synchronized group movement remains mysterious.
Right, and this is the kind of story that thrives on Hacker News, because the community includes the kind of people who will immediately start modeling the thermal dynamics in their heads and posting back-of-envelope calculations in the comments.
Now, we talked a lot today about Tencent's Hi-4 open-source release and the general trajectory of capable open-source AI models. The confident claim in most HN discussion and in most AI coverage is that open-source model quality is catching up to frontier closed-source models and that this trend will continue. I want to push on that assumption because I think it might be more fragile than it looks.
What's the strongest version of the counterargument?
The argument for open source catching up rests on two premises. First, that architectural innovations diffuse quickly because research is published. And second, that compute is becoming cheaper so the gap in training resources is narrowing. Both of those premises have been largely true for the past 3 years. But there's a third factor that doesn't diffuse: proprietary data. The frontier models at OpenAI, Google, and Anthropic are trained on data that those companies have licensed, collected, or generated in ways that aren't reproducible by the open source community. As text data becomes more valuable, and as licensing negotiations become more complex, that data advantage might actually widen rather than narrow.
That's a real tension. The open source models have closed the benchmark gap significantly, but benchmarks measure performance on specific tasks, many of which can be addressed through architecture and fine-tuning. The harder question is whether proprietary data, especially recent web data with proper licensing, or synthetic data generated by the frontier models themselves and used to train successors, creates a compounding advantage that benchmarks don't fully capture.
And there's a second assumption worth questioning, that open-source compute costs are actually converging with frontier compute. The models we see open source today, Hi-4, Llama-4, Mistral's releases, were trained on compute that cost tens of millions of dollars. That's far below what OpenAI or Google spends on their frontier models, which are estimated in the hundreds of millions to billions of dollars range. The open source community is training on last year's compute budget, not this year's. If the frontier keeps expanding at that rate, open source is always chasing a moving target.
So what's the signal to watch for if we're wrong about open source catching up? I'd look at the performance gap on tasks that require genuine reasoning over novel domains, not code completion, not math benchmarks, but the kind of multi-step reasoning that requires integrating information across very different domains. If that gap starts closing in the next 12 months, the catch-up thesis holds. If it remains stable or widens despite continued open source progress, then proprietary data and compute scale are doing more work than the optimists think.
And specifically, watch the Hi-4 evaluations that independent researchers run over the next few weeks. The initial benchmark numbers from Tencent are self-reported. Once the broader research community has had time to red team it and run their own evaluations, we'll have a cleaner picture of where the model actually sits relative to the frontier. That's the data point I'll be watching.